welcome to the New Beginnings message of the week. We hope you enjoy this message from our Sunday service. For more information about our church, please visit us online at newbeginningscos.com.
I don't know about you guys, but I've noticed that there are some people that you watch go through storms, you watch go through difficult circumstances, and they come out the other side angry, bitter, depressed. They come out the other side way worse off. They come out the other side, frankly, like you would expect someone to look after they've gone through a storm. It's not an indictment against them. I think when you have a storm, there's wreckage, right? There's usually wreckage from a storm. But then there's some people who go through something difficult, who go through a storm, and when you see them on the other side of it, there's a lightness that they didn't have before. There's a transition, there's a change that actually has improved their life. It's actually made things better. They've actually become a healthier person on the other side of tragedy and trial. And I want to really dig into why that is, because I think we all either are facing, will face, or have faced different degrees of storms in our lives. So the question is not, how do we avoid the storm? But the question is, how do we come out the other side better than we were? How do we come out the other side closer to Jesus? How do we come out the other side without all of the wreckage, but actually being built up stronger? Because I believe that that's what God has for us. When we talk about storms, Proverbs 1, verse 27 kind of defines it in a really interesting way. It says, when terror strikes you like a storm, and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. And this can take many shapes, right? This can be, I think we've all faced different kinds. There's been financial distress, where there's problems with jobs or income. There's been relationship distress, maybe in a marriage or in connection with parents or friends or loved ones. There's health distress, right? There's things that hit us, and all of a sudden us or someone we really care about is dealing with something really difficult and really, really tragic. There's emotional things that pop up, sometimes that have been buried and all of a sudden come out, and we find ourselves in the middle of a storm. And so how do we deal with those? And I think one of the things we find is when the storm pops up, the first question that we almost always ask is, why? Why is this happening to me? And really what we're kind of looking for is who to blame. One of the things you find, have you ever walked into a room and, you know, see a big spill on the floor? This is maybe just a parent thing. See a big spill on the floor, and the first question that pops out is, who did this? What's interesting about that question is it does nothing to solve the problem at all. It's looking to assign blame, but it has no impact on solving the problem. And I think a lot of times we get so stuck on this question of why. Why? Why is this happening? Why is this happening to me? And when we get stuck in that question, we find ourselves in a freeze state where hard things are happening to us and around us, but we are so swirling in the why that we're not actually addressing the storm. We're both not protecting ourselves against it or preparing to go through it. And so I want to encourage us, why, I think, is an important question, but it should never be our first question. Next week, I want to dig into why. Why do storms happen? But this week, I want to talk about how. The first question that we should ask is, how do we get through this? How am I going to get through this storm? What is going to take me through this to the other side and help me to get better than I was before? You know, I think of, we were watching a movie the other night. It was a great movie, and this couple was in hiding because they were being sought after by terrorists. And one of the things that they had ready to go was a bag. They had a bag prepared. So literally, when it was time to move, you grab the bag, you grab one or two things, and they're out the door within seconds. And I think sometimes how we get through comes from preparation. It comes from knowing, if I know that storms are going to happen, I can be prepared. And in being prepared doesn't always mean I'm preparing. Listen, it doesn't mean I'm preparing myself against the worst that could happen. It's not a pessimism. It's actually something that says, when I have a trial, my heart is prepared. It knows what to do. It knows what to grab. I know what to go after. And that's what we get from asking ourselves the question of how am I going to get through this storm? So I want to define what that actually looks like. Because the most important thing we can have is perspective. I think one of the big things about this is we have to remember that our approach determines our result. Your approach determines your result. So your approach to the storm, let's put it this way. If we approach everything with fear and with I don't know what to do, it's too big for me, then in the middle of the storm, you're not going to have actions that help you to connect with the Lord's heart in that moment. You're not going to have actions that help you to connect with his word or his promises. You're going to have actions that actually connect you more with the voice of the accuser, the voice of shame, the voice of fear. But what we focus on, what we lend our perspective to, is going to make a massive impact. I'll give you an example. This isn't a specifically storm example, but I had a time in my life where I was looking for a job. This was, oh gosh, way before we were married. This was probably when I was still in college, I think. And I found a bookstore. I really love books, and I wanted to go work at this bookstore. And so I went in, and I dropped off my application. This older woman was working there, and she was nice at first. And then I didn't hear back from them, so I came in a day or two later, and she's like, why are you here? And I was like, well, I haven't heard back. I just wanted to touch base and make sure the manager knew I'm very interested in this job. And she's like, well, he already knows. You gave him your application, so he'll call you. I said, okay. I came in another couple days later because I still hadn't heard back. And she's like, she was real frustrated with me. And so she was like, you're an idiot. Like, she didn't say this to me, but she definitely treated me with this, like, sassy, like, I don't know why you are here. You don't belong here. I don't think you're going to get this job. Like, she was not at all happy. And here's the thing. Let me give you a perspective of a tale of two Davids, okay? Tale of two cities. A tale of two Davids. Old David was easily discouraged, was easily put down, was easily offended. You say the wrong thing to me, or you even say something that could have sounded like the wrong thing, I'm not going to react against you, but internally I'm going to go, oh, they hate me. And I was much more just susceptible to that kind of discouragement, that kind of offense. My perspective was lent toward expecting the worst that was going to happen and also toward not knowing how to overcome it. But in this situation, I had begun to make a shift in my life, and I begun to really receive my identity in the Lord and to really comprehend who I was in him. So every time this lady was making these faces at me, I'm just smiling at her, and I'm like, that's okay. I hope you have a wonderful day. I really hope I get this job. Would you talk me up? Yeah, right, she's going to talk me up. But I had a perspective that said, it doesn't matter where you're at. I know I want this job. And I kind of came in like, I know we're going to be friends. And I did get the job, and I ended up working there, and we did. And she loved me after that. Like, it took some time for her to warm up. I think at first, even after I got the job, she was a little bit like, you're going to be all needy and weird, aren't you? And I'm like, nope, just happy. But over time, because my perspective was on, I know there's something on the other side of this. And I think there's something about whether it's just a little thing like that or a big, massive storm, if something in our hearts can say, I know there's something on the other side of this, and I'm going to live out of the other side instead of out of the struggle right here. You may not like me right now. I know that's a temporary hurdle. I can overcome that. It's a lot harder to do when it's a bigger hurdle. It's a lot harder to do when it's, I've lost my job, my spouse wants a divorce, somebody has a massive sickness. That's a lot harder to do. However, there's a principle involved that's the same. And the principle is, we have to answer, how am I going to get through this? Because if my answer to how I'm going to get through this is hanging by the edge of my fingernails, then we're going to have really sore hands and possibly get swept away by the wind. But if the answer is, I'm going to get through this like a rock because I'm on a rock, that perspective begins to shift our ability to get through what we're facing. Your approach determines your result. Matthew 15 describes this really well. Matthew 15, starting in verse 26, Jesus is speaking to this woman who says, my daughter has a demon possession, can you help me? And it says, Jesus responded, it's not right for a man to take bread from his children and throw it out to the dogs. You're right, Lord, she replied, but even puppies get to eat the crumbs that fall from the prince's table. Then Jesus answered her, dear woman, your faith is strong. What you desire will be done for you. And at that very moment, her daughter was instantly set free from demonic torment. Now, there's so many pieces of this story that I can't get into today, but the piece I do want to get into is I don't believe that Jesus was saying, I don't want to heal your daughter. I think it's important that we differentiate. He doesn't say, I won't heal her. He doesn't say, I don't want to heal her. Here's what he says. He says, it's not right to take bread from his children and throw it out to the dogs. Now, to the dogs, again, we might think, like, that's a really rude thing to say. That's, you'd think of, like, just random stray dogs. Well, actually, what he's describing is the word he uses is actually domesticated family pets, like puppies. They're still a member of the house. They're still a part of the house. They're actually a loved part of the house. But Jesus is saying, hey, I'm really here for Israel. And what's interesting is he's not saying this to dissuade her. He's saying this because he knows what's in her. Constantly throughout the New Testament, we know when Jesus looked at people, he saw prophetically what was in them. And so he sees what's in this woman, and I think Jesus is like, this woman's got gumption, she's got sass, and he's like, I want to teach my boys a lesson here, so I'm going to pull out that sass. You ever have somebody that you would say something to them that you wouldn't say to anybody else because you know they can take it? There's certain things I'll say to my wife that I wouldn't say to anybody else. There's certain people I would say because I know how they're going to take it. And I think Jesus knew how she was going to take it. And he's like, all right, let's try this. So it's not okay for the man to take food from his kids and give it to the dogs. And she's like, oh, I gotcha. She instant. Can you imagine the kind of instant? Like, again, some people would be so easy to be offended and to walk away and go, oh, he called me a dog. Forget it. Jesus knew what was in her, and what he called out of her was a level of faith that was incredible, because she says, even the dogs get crumbs. She's like, I know you're not the kind of person to let anybody hungry walk away unfed. And Jesus goes, yes, you hear that, boys? That's what I'm talking about. He gets this. So that perspective that she had says, it doesn't matter if God himself is, it feels like he's putting a hurdle in my way, because that's not what he was doing. But sometimes it feels like, God, you're not answering me right away. You're not giving me what I ask for. You're actually, why are you asking me a question or saying something back to me when I'm asking you for something? And sometimes we feel like, oh, I'm done. I give up, and we stop praying. And this lady's like, I'm not done, because I know there's something good on the other side, because I know that's the character of this God. I think the classic story of all of this, and then I'm going to dig into this just a little bit, is the story of Job. Job was considered righteous by God, but he also went through immense struggle and pain. There's a lot of misperceptions about Job, and I'm going to pull out some of them. We don't have time to go through all of them. Job is can be a very confusing book of the Bible. But here's what I want to get to. He was considered righteous by God. He goes through all of this horrible stuff. He loses his wealth, his children, and his health comes under attack as well. And there's two primary perspectives that are displayed in the book of Job. The most clearly unhelpful perspective comes from Job's friends. And his friends are sitting around him, and they're looking at him, and they're saying, dude, this is your fault. What did you do? What did you do? Because when bad things happen, God's going to hurt you, or he is hurting you because of something you did. This is the perspective of God that his friends had, and his friends are constantly saying, you did something wrong, you did something wrong. And can you imagine this man? He's in this tragedy. He's in this horrible situation, and his friends are sitting there. First, they do the right thing. They sit there in silence, which is great. Sometimes you need someone to be next to you but not all up in your business when you're trying to walk through something hard. And his friends do that for him. But then they get into this place where the words that start coming out are very accusatory, very condemning, very attacking. You're doing something wrong. Your world will be fixed when you get fixed. And I think too often Christians have been guilty of this mindset toward others. We've looked at the storms in other people's lives, and I've heard from many Christian circles this concept that, well, if you just prayed more, if you just got your life right, how many people do you know who get their life right and things still aren't good? They're still hard. We put it into this perception that if you just did the right things, then God would do the right things. And what we're really doing is turning God into a vending machine. Insert enough change and you'll get the reward. And that's not how it works. It's a relationship. So this moment where Job is sitting there, he's getting all this blame. They're not helping him to get to the other side of this storm. But they're stuck in this moment of, you're the reason. And I think one of the things that we face is a massive amount of shame when we're in a storm. I think sometimes we think, I'm the reason I'm in this storm. I did something. Maybe I know what I think I did, or maybe I don't know. Maybe I don't have a clue what I did. I just know if I hadn't done something, I probably wouldn't be here. So why am I going through this? And what the devil does is he uses that shame to kind of weasel its way in so that we're so focused on me, we don't have any focus on the solution to the storm and to the problems that we're facing. And that's what Job is getting from his friends. It's a big, big distraction. The other main perspective in Job comes from Job himself. And this is interesting. Job actually says, well, I haven't done anything. I haven't done anything. And what's interesting about this is I don't actually believe that he's prideful in saying this. I actually believe that he's pretty self-aware. He's pretty self-aware to go, I know what sin looks like. And I know I've kept myself from it. But then he turns from that self-awareness and he goes, so God messed up. God's doing it wrong. God's punishing me. God should never have let me be born. And so then he turns from me, right? His friend's going, you're responsible. He goes, well, I didn't do anything. So therefore, the responsible party is God. And God, this is a divine mess up. And it's all at your feet. How does that work out for him? Not so well. What's interesting in both situations, and I'm not going to dive super deep into this week, I'm going to dive more into this next week, but what's interesting in this situation is in both scenarios, they're blaming God for the tragedy. In one, they're saying he did it because Job sinned. In Job, he's saying it happened because God messed up. In both of them, they're blaming God for the tragedy. And what's interesting is that God is not about that, and he doesn't have that. So he steps in and begins to talk to Job pretty strongly about that. He's like, you're laying this at my feet. You don't have a comprehension of who I am, of what I am, of what I contain, of what I created. And it's interesting that God begins to go through all of the beauty in the world that he designed and that he created. And I think one of the things that he's doing in this is demonstrating, I have a heart of beauty. I have a heart of love. I have a heart that sees everything. I don't make mistakes. And when these tragedies and these storms and these struggles come, it's not because God is putting his finger onto your life and saying, I want a tragedy here. I want a cancer there. I want a human trafficking there. I want a murder there. I mean, I'm not going to dive super deep into this, but I think it's important that we know when these storms come, there's two big distractions. We can go so focused on blame toward ourselves or so focused on blame toward God that we actually miss the point that that's not the kind of God that he is. He's not the God that just stirs up havoc because, oh, it'll help them to grow. Job and his friends are having this back and forth. You know, it's your fault. It's God's fault. It's your fault. It's just, It's all the distraction. Job 10, verse 3, Job actually says, "Does it seem good to you, God, to oppress, to despise the work of your hands and favor the designs of the wicked?" You can see he's asking God, why is this happening? Again, the question we got to pull back to, though, is how am I going to get through this? See, religion says God's bad or you're bad. And God's not bad, so you must be bad. And it just kind of lands in this place of every bad thing is because of you. If we reorient that, though, we're still stuck on the why. We're still stuck on the who did this. But if we read the book of Job, the Job is not designed to tell us why bad things happen to good people. And anyone who has read the book of Job through the lens of why bad things happen or why bad things happen to good people is missing the point. That's not the point of Job. The point of Job is what happens when faith overcomes unanswered questions. It's the triumph of faith over unanswered questions. God doesn't answer all the questions and line them up neatly. But the faith of Job that says, I'm not abandoning you. I'm real mad at you, but I'm not going anywhere. And God's saying, good, because I'm not abandoning you. And I'm not mad at you. And I'm not going anywhere. It shows us what it looks like to get to the other side of a storm with our connection with God intact. When we talk about how we're going to get through this, one of my favorite examples is Peter in the water. You've got this amazing example of Jesus walking on the water. Everybody thinks he's a ghost, and John's the only one that gets it. He's like, it's the Lord. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then Peter wildly has to go, okay, if it's really you, ask me to come out to you. Has anybody seen the scene in The Chosen? It's so powerful. It's so good. It pulls in some other pieces that maybe aren't extra biblical, but I think it's so well done. But the idea that there's this massive storm going on, everything's crashing around, everything is blowing like crazy, and Peter says, ask me to come out to you. Because Peter's starting to get something that the other disciples haven't quite latched onto yet. And that's that what Jesus is doing, what Jesus did, he didn't come and do as God. He was fully God. He was fully man. But he actually relied on the Holy Spirit in the same way that we rely on the Holy Spirit. Jesus actually said to them, everything I've done, you'll do in greater things. You'll do greater things. So Jesus didn't come and say, I'm going to remake the world the way that God does. And I guess what I'm trying to say is Jesus came and modeled for us a life dependent on the power of the Holy Spirit and the voice of God. A life that we can follow. The interesting thing about Jesus is he came into a culture, into a time where he was called a rabbi, into a place where the whole system was designed so that it's not supposed to be you have a rabbi who has students who stay students. It's actually supposed to be you have a rabbi who has students who become exactly like their rabbi. It's not, and the interesting thing is Peter starts to get this. Everybody else, I think, is still stuck in this, like, everything you're doing is too wild, it's too out there, like, we're going to sit back in the kiddie chairs and just keep learning, and there's nothing wrong with that. But then Peter begins to say, well, I want to sit back and keep learning, but you're taking the steps. I want to take the steps with you, because if I'm your disciple, then I'm supposed to look like you. That means I'm supposed to do the same things that you're doing. That means when you cast out demons and you touch people and they get well, that's supposed to happen with me. That's why Peter's the one who says in Acts, his shadow healed people, because he recognized that it's not just watching what God can do, but it's actually, what can I do if I join in with you? So Peter sees the storm and he's like, well, if you're walking on it, I can walk on it. Call me out to you. And Jesus goes, all right, come on out. And so he's walking on these waves. He's walking in the storm. And in the middle of this, he begins to lose his focus. When his eyes are on Jesus, he's doing great. But he begins to get distracted by the waves, by the lightning, by the wind, by the rain, by the storm. And it says he began to sink. See, when we go through storms, it's so hard not to see the storm. It is the loudest, most obvious, most in-our-face thing that we're experiencing. But if we're thinking, instead of who's responsible for the storm, how am I going to get to the other side of the storm? What we are looking at is the eyes of Jesus. If we're looking at how am I going to get to the other side of this, it's not a, oh no, poor me, this is too big, I can't do this. Now, we may go through pain and struggle, it may be difficult, but our eyes get set on Jesus and we go, it doesn't matter how big the storm is, because as long as my eyes are on him, I can get to the other side of this. How I'm going to get through this storm is together. It's together. Because listen, when we're going through pain and struggle, nothing makes you feel more isolated than pain, than struggle, than storms. All of a sudden, every time we go through, like, have you ever stubbed your toe or like you do something, you get a really bad splinter, like our fence, man, it's horrible. Like literally you put your hand on it and you're going to have slivers deep. And when that happens, are you even aware of who is around you? When you're really hurt, everything else disappears and it's the pain, right? It's the shout of the pain. And I think sometimes we get stuck in that place because it feels like the pain keeps on going. It feels like the storm's not over. And as long as the storm's continuing, we're still focused on the pain. But if we can get to the other place where we're saying, I'm looking at the heart of Jesus, how I'm going to get through this is together. That means that even though I feel alone, even though I feel isolated, I know he's with me and he's for me. That's how we get to the other side. There's an incredible story I want to tell real quick about George Mueller. Do you guys, anybody heard of George Mueller? He had 5 orphan houses, and he cared for over 10,000 orphans in his life, and he had all kinds of incredible miracles and things during the Great Awakening. But this story, this is a true story. It says, one morning, all of the plates and cups and bowls on the table were empty in this orphanage. There's no food in the larder and no money to buy food. The children were standing, waiting for their morning meal, when Mueller said, children, you know we must be in time for school. Then lifting up his hands, he prayed, dear Father, we thank thee for what thou art going to give us to eat. There was a knock at the door. The baker stood there and said, Mr. Mueller, I couldn't sleep last night. Somehow I felt you didn't have bread for breakfast, and the Lord wanted me to send you some. So I got up at 2 a.m., and baked fresh bread, enough for everybody, and I've brought it. Mr. Mueller thanked the baker, and no sooner had he left when there was a second knock at the door. It was the milkman. He announced that his milk cart had broken down right in front of the orphanage, and he would like to give the children his cans of fresh milk so he could empty his wagon and repair it. This is a true story, and this kind of thing happened to him a lot. He lived this kind of life where it was like, literally, God, whatever we need, you're going to provide. What would happen if we could turn our hearts to say, whatever I'm going through, I'm going to open my hands for the Lord to provide and actually approach it with thankfulness. I'm going to get through the storm not by looking at the storm. I'm going to get through the storm by keeping my eyes on a God who's looking at me, who intimately knows me and knows what I'm going through. He's not sitting there putting his finger on me, making the pain worse. He's actually waiting for us to come and go, Lord, I know you can do this, and I'm not moving. I'm not going anywhere. Like the woman who wanted her daughter healed, she's like, I ain't leaving. She had the sass to just say, like, Jesus, I know who you are. I know who you are. I know what you're like. When we face storms, what we're looking at is going to change everything about what we receive, what the outcome is. It's the last piece I want to share here. Many years ago, when was Hurricane Katrina? That was 2009? No, 2007? 6? 5. Going way back. Okay. 2005. So after Katrina, my wife and I, before she was my wife and I, before she was even my girlfriend and I, we took a youth group trip down to do just help with relief, help with all of the homes that had been devastated and people that had been hurt. And so we went out there, and it had been long enough that you know, people were out of immediate need. But when you walk down these neighborhoods, they're demolished. it's destroyed. And they had moved things off of the roads so cars could drive mainly, but these houses were just devastated. But many of them could be salvaged. And so one of the things that we had to do was we had to go into the home and gut them and just pull out all of the rotting drywall, find any wood that was rotting and cut it off, look through cabinets, and it was hard work. I mean, there's two things that I hate in this world. Well, there's at least two, but two big ones for me are mold and cockroaches. Guess what we found in plenty supply everywhere. And so we're doing this work, but here's the interesting thing. Every storm leaves wreckage, right? Every storm leaves wreckage. One of the things that I think we struggle through is when we have wreckage in our life from a storm, often we don't clear it out. Often we don't actually clean up the debris and the stuff that's rotted and the stuff that's gotten moldy. We don't clear out the bugs and all the things that have blown into our lives. We just kind of pick up and move on. And I think sometimes we face storms and we get to the other side, but especially if we haven't gotten through from a place of being prepared and connected with Jesus. I think there's a lot of past storms in our lives that we get to the other side and then we begin rebuilding, but we begin rebuilding with all of the debris still there. And so as we close, here's what I want to do this morning. I want to invite us to connect with the heart of Jesus for a couple minutes, to clear out whatever debris we may have from past storms. And then I want to invite us to gaze upon him and connect with him in his heart to help us prepare and be ready and be connected with him for whatever storms we might be in now or we might face later. So if you would just put on some of the instrumental worship, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to just kind of lead us for a minute, and then I'm going to have us just engage with him personally, okay? So if everybody would just close your eyes, just put your hand on your heart. Come on now. There we go. All right. Guys, it's so important that we get our hearts cleaned out. So right now, I want you to just connect with him. Forget everybody else is around you. And Holy Spirit, we just welcome you. We invite you. God, sometimes things have flooded into our lives and left debris. Broken hearts, hurt feelings, offense, wounds. And God, we don't want to carry yesterday's problems into tomorrow anymore. So Father, I just pray, like, I just picture like stepping into a shower and just all of the junk being washed away, the mud, the cares of the day. In the same way, Father, would you just come and just rain down on us? Holy Spirit, would you just wash away all of the debris, all of the stuff that is built up, God, from storms we just faced recently and from storms that happened a long time ago. God, we open ourselves up to you and give you free rein to wash away every part that doesn't belong there anymore. God, any ways that we have built on something faulty, that we've started thinking wrongly as a result of those storms, God, would you reorient us? Would you reshape us?